This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Some of the A-list actors that we think of today, Samuel L. Jackson, Lupita Nyong'o, Idris Elba, it's crazy to think that 100 years ago, they would not have been allowed on stage in the United States. But that's where the country was when Charles Gilpin became a star. One of the first breakout celebrities of the American stage, Gilpin is the subject of a new play at Detroit's Plowshares Theater. The play's called N, as in the first letter of the word that blew up Gilpin's relationship with the playwright Eugene O'Neill. A new work by an emerging playwright, N poses layered questions about interracial friendships, what artists of color have to do to succeed, and the nature of collaboration. Plowshares artistic director is Gary Anderson. Gary, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
So who was Charles Gilpin for people who may not be familiar with the history?
Charles S. Gilpin was the first Black dramatic star of Broadway. Charles was an actor who had caught the bug early in his career. He started out wanting to be a singer. In fact, he was part of a Jubilee Singers community in Hamilton, Ontario, performed in minstrel shows as well, and eventually gravitated to acting in shows, specifically with the Anita Bush Players, which was a early African-American theater company that was housed in Harlem in the early part of the 20th century, then got opportunities for himself as a dramatic actor on Broadway.
And yet, he was someone who had to maintain a day job, as many actors do, but
right.
Especially African-American actors
right.
In that period.
Right. He, in this show, we have him featured as one of the jobs he did, which was he ran the elevator at Macy's in downtown New York.
The Emperor Jones was the play that really rocketed Gilpin's career to the highest levels.
It was the event because he had done some off-Broadway work. He had been in a Broadway show just the year prior when he played in Abraham. He played a small character in a production of Abraham Lincoln by John Linkletter that had gotten him attention because of the power of his performance. But yes, this was the first lead role he played in his entire life where he got significant recognition within the theater world. And his performance and the power of the show also elevated the popularity of the piece that it was eventually moved to Broadway because it was off-Broadway at the Provincetown Playhouse.
Eugene O'Neill is obviously one of the biggest names in American theater.
Mm-hmm.
Won a Pulitzer for drama, but a lot of people, a lot of people do not know that he wrote this play for Charles Gilpin.
He didn't write it for Gilpin. He wrote it. There was actually another actor in the Provincetown Players, a white actor. At the beginning of the 20th century, the tradition was if you wrote Black characters, you might have them played by white actors in blackface, even dramatic performances. So it wasn't – there was actually a white actor, a guy named Charles Ellis, in the company who had anticipated playing Brutus Jones. It was the quality of Charles Gilpin's performance that he got the role over this white actor who they already had a relationship with.
The Emperor Jones is a story about this man who kills an acquaintance after a dice game goes sideways and goes on the lam in the Caribbean. He's on the run from the law. He's on the run from people on the island where he's hiding out. Why was the show so popular?
To be honest with you, I think there was a number of reasons why it's so popular. I think that it presented a perspective of African-American culture that was palatable at the time in the early part of the 20th century. As you said, all these things are true. Brutus Jones is a murderer. He's a thief. He manipulates and actually subjugates other Black people for his power. I mean, he's cruel. He's a despot. And the reason why he eventually has to run away from them is because he knows that the cruelty of his rule is going to eventually overcome him, and they're going to want to take his life. And he sets himself up so that he can eventually live. So O'Neill has created this really horrific character. And I think that was palatable. I think when you look at the other images of the time, the Black characters that are in Birth of a Nation by D.W. Griffith, the impression of the brutal Black buck that was being presented, you have a character in Brutus Jones that is in line with that. In spite of all of those things, Charles Gilpin brought humanity and understanding to this character that gave him more dimensions than just the two-dimensional character that was actually on the page.
Who was going to see the play?
Whites. I mean, the primary audience for Broadway shows, or even the members of the Provincetown Players, were theater-going audience of that time and even today, which was predominantly white people. And so there was no opportunity for black people in New York to frequent the theaters. But it was successful.
So Adrian Pender's play and lays mm-hmm. out all of this
it lays
for
out,
us.
It lays out the backstory. It right. lays out what happens behind the stage.
And gets us to the point at which Charles Gilpin and Eugene O'Neill develop a friendship but ultimately fall out over mm-hmm. aspects of the play. What do we know about the temperature of their relationship?
Well, we know that it runs the gamut of over six years, from 1920 when they're first introduced at an audition for the role, to roughly the last revival of the production in which Gilpin has any involvement. The last 4 years of his life, we find that he eventually ends up back in Richmond. He abandons his wife, he abandons their young child, and he is living with – he dies in the home of his common-law wife at that time, that was a woman that was not married to him and no longer doing theater, but had been celebrated in Richmond for all of the activities and accolades that he had received.
There are scenes in this play mm-hmm. that show us O'Neill and Gilpin sort of in this prickly phase where they're
right.
starting to get to know each other.
Right.
And O'Neill is pretty much confronted for what may be the first time in his life for how his lack of understanding for black life in
mm-hmm.
America.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, he's pushing back on Gilpin a little bit.
Well, you know, theirs was an interesting relationship. Part of it is that, yes, there's a dynamic between the actor and the playwright. And one of the arguments that we deal with in this play is who has the authority or who has the right in regards to carving the character out, fleshing the character out? Is it solely the product of the playwright, or is it solely the product of the actor who fleshes the character out? And in fact, that's part of the conflict. The conversation about theater creation and collaboration that is in the play is enhanced because of the dynamic of race. You have a black man who sees this as the opportunity that it is to elevate himself, and he receives recognition no other black actor has received up to that time. And it becomes intoxicating. At the same time, O'Neill has something to lose here too, because this is the first show of his that made real money. He may have gotten a Pulitzer for Beyond the Horizon. He may have gotten accolades and recognitions for the earlier short plays that he had been doing. But The Emperor Jones was a bona fide commercial hit, one that was different than any of the other shows he had done prior to this because of the fact that it was so financially successful.
My guest is Gary Anderson of Plowshares Theater in Detroit. Plowshares is staging the play End this month about actor Charles Gilpin. We invited the actors who play two of the leads to share some scenes with us. T. Farrell Muhammad plays Charles Gilpin in the show. Some of his recent credits include Chicago Med and last summer's Netflix drama Black and Privileged. Lisa Loggins is an actor and line producer who's done several productions with Plowshares. She's playing Gilpin's wife, Florence. In this scene, Gilpin has just landed a role in a new play by Eugene O'Neill, who is already becoming famous. Gilpin rushes home to tell his wife, Florence.
Thanks again for staying late with the baby, Mrs. Cooper.
Florence, you won't believe what just happened.
What?
I got a part in a play, a big part.
What? How?
The Emperor Jones by Eugene O'Neill.
Ain't never heard of him before.
He's a new playwright at one of those new theaters downtown. He's a white man.
A white man is going to let you in his play?
Yes, baby.
But you're a Negro.
Yes, I know.
Must be a small part.
Look here.
The Emperor Jones by Eugene O'Neill, produced by the Provincetown Players.
It's the lead, Florence. I'm playing the Emperor Jones.
No.
Yes, baby, me.
So how much does it pay?
$50.
Say that again.
It pays $50 a week.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Baby, I told you I was going to be able to take care of you, and now I finally can.
Oh, I always knew you would. I just never thought it would come from acting.
And neither did I, but I am 40 years old, and I finally have something I can be proud of.
Oh, $50 a week. That's real money.
Now, the show may only run for a short while, maybe about 3 weeks or maybe a month, so that's only $200.
Only?
Well, you can't quit your job yet, but we can catch up.
I worked all my life, and I will work all my life. And ain't no change in that, but maybe we can save a little for the baby.
And maybe have another baby?
Charles.
I just don't want you working for white folks cleaning their houses. I want you here in our home.
We ain't there yet.
Yet.
So, how did all this happen?
Okay. All right. So, I'm working my job, working the elevator at Macy's every day, right? White folks get on, and they get off the elevator all the time. I don't even pay any attention anymore. And after lunch, a man gets on, and he says, "Excuse me, are you Charles Gilpin?" I said, "Yes." "Second floor, corsets, ladies' underlings." He says, "I'm from the Provincetown Players, and I have a part in a new play by O'Neill." "Eugene O'Neill," I say. He says, "Yes." I said, "What kind of part is this?" "Fourth floor, furniture." He said, "It's the lead." And I said, "How much does this lead pay?" He said, "We can only pay you $50, but wouldn't you like to act again?" And I said, "Yes, yes, I would." And I said, "Who are you, and where do I go?" He says, "I'm Jasper Dieter." And then he took me down to McDougal Street, where the Provincetown Theater is. And they gave me a script and gave me a few minutes to look it over. And it was great. I could tell right away. O'Neill is quiet, doesn't say much. But his words on paper, I've never seen words like that before. Brutus is a ex-Pullman porter, like me. I knew him. Baby, I knew him right away. Jasper asked if I wanted him to read with me, and I said, "No, I'll just read the first part of the monologue if that was all right with them." And then my shoulders went back, my voice rose, and all the noise in the theater went quiet. Everything went quiet. And I was in the jungle, scared for my life. And before I knew it, the monologue was over. O'Neill stood and asked me why I stopped. He stared at me, and he said, "The part is yours. Can you start rehearsal tomorrow?"
Oh, Charles.
The lead. Oh, my God. There was another actor there, a white guy named Charles Ellis. He wanted the role, too. Wanted to play it in blackface, like a lot of these theaters do these days. Well, Jasper saw me in the Abraham Lincoln play, and he brought O'Neill and another man. And thank God I felt Brutus today. I took that part right out of that white man's hands.
Oh, I don't believe it.
It feels like I know Brutus. There are Brutus Joneses all over Harlem. Just men wanting to be more than what they are, just waiting for their chance to be something great. The script, well, you know how white folks think we talk. Yeah. O'Neill has a lot of dims and dares in there for thems and theirs. It's all over the place.
Yeah, like we're all ignorant, still slaves. I was polishing silver today, and Mrs. Mason comes in and decides to tell me how to do it properly. Then she spoke real loud and slow, like I didn't understand English. "Woman, I was born here just like you were. I've been polishing silver all my life. I know what to do."
I know you didn't say that to her.
Of course not. I said, "Yes, ma'am," like I always do.
The script has a lot of that word in it, too.
Charles.
Well, they call us and they think we call each other that, too. And we don't talk like that. But I can fix it.
Yep. You're not going to fix anything. This is a chance a colored man may never have again.
I can finally show the world what I can do.
Are you listening to me? Do what they tell you to do and go where they tell you to go. It's his script. Say the words he wrote. And stay away from that bottle. Do you hear me?
I'll be fine.
Do you hear me? Just say yes, ma'am.
Farrah Mohammed and Lisa Loggins, they are starring in N at Plowshares in Detroit. Thank you for the reading, first of all.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Charles Gilpin faces this decision about taking this role, which from his perspective is not even a decision at all, because right. He does want back in the game. But do you see things that you understand in how he has to approach what he doesn't like about the script and what he thinks is possible for himself and his family?
Yeah, I think that ultimately that's something that many actors still grapple with is looking at an opportunity, a potential opportunity,
yes.
and struggling with what may not necessarily fit right with your soul when you're playing or taking on a particular character. I think in this case, Charles Gilpin sees his character as an unsavory character, but because he is talented and skilled, he believes that he can present him in a way that is even unimagined by the writer himself. So yes, he may have a particular look on paper, but how Gilpin is going to portray him is completely different, which is going to bring a certain pride to his performance and not a regular, ordinary buffoonery that many actors have had to succumb to.
Would you two be willing to tell us about a situation that you might have been in where you made much more of a role than there was on the page?
Well, I think that there was one situation where I was given an opportunity to play a character that I was not very fond of as well. And you find yourself in that valley of decision, like, should I do this because of what could come behind it? Right. You know, other opportunities, because there are other people looking at you as well. It's not just that one director. You have the casting directors, you have other producers, you have all. And so I was able to have a conversation with the director and the writer with respect to the authenticity of what they were asking my character to do. It was for a pilot show, and we were shooting in Chicago. And although the pilot never landed, we were able to make some adjustments. I thought my character was too sensitive for the time. I was playing a cop. And although I was concerned with one of the other characters who was getting into trouble, I thought that there should be a fine line between what this officer offers to this youngster and what he doesn't, because he still has a job to do. And so once we talked with the writers and the director, we were able to make the character a little bit more authentic and a little bit more real. And so that was a struggle, because I've grown up with officers, and I knew that what was written by someone who had very little
interaction with
cops, especially in urban areas. And so, but yeah, it was a challenge, but we got through it.
Yeah. And I'll say just what he said. Hopefully you have a director who allows you the creative freedom to do, you know, more with the character. And I read tons of scripts, as I know you do as well. And I was talking to Gary, our director, about this. I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to say what I will not do. So I have a supportive husband, a supportive family, and I can say, you know, I don't do this, I don't do that. The things that I hold sacred to me and my family, and how I want to be remembered in history for doing what I love to do.
T. Farrow Muhammad and Lisa Loggins, they're starring in the play N at Plowshares Theater in Detroit. The show is directed by Plowshares' Gary Anderson. We'll hear more from him after a break. This is Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We're talking today with Gary Anderson, artistic director at Detroit's Plowshares Theater, and he's directing the play N at Plowshares, which is about the actor Charles Gilpin. Gilpin, who was African-American, became famous in the early 1920s, starring in a play by Eugene O'Neill called The Emperor Jones. Gilpin felt that the play was deeply demeaning in its language and use of stereotypes. I asked Gary Anderson about the collaboration between the playwright and the actor. This conversation between these two men feels mm-hmm. so relevant right
yeah.
now. Eugene O'Neill is saying, I created this role.
Right.
I understand mm-hmm. it. And Gilpin is coming back at him saying, you've never lived my life. You can't possibly understand this role as I am playing it on stage.
Well, there are certain distinct things about Brutus Jones that Charles understood intimately. The character, as it's written, is a Pullman porter. O'Neill knows absolutely nothing about Pullman porters other than the use of them when he was on a train.
He knows they exist.
He knows they exist, exactly. Charles was a Pullman porter. He understands the humiliating, derisive nature of being called George. All Pullman porters on every train in this country was never called by their real name. They were all called George because the name of the man who ran the company was George Pullman. And so that devaluing of your individuality is an aspect of the job that you had, the thing that actually kept you alive. That's a unique aspect of the character that Charles brought to it. And so when you know that as a part of their biography of Brutus Jones, you can see how when he's provided with an opportunity of leadership, of authority, he becomes a despot, much in the way that he's treated when he's on the trains as a Pullman porter. When you have the reins of power, what you do is you emulate the oppressor that oppressed you.
You don't know what else to do with your power but to oppress.
Exactly,
others.
Exactly. And so when you look at how Gilpin rendered the character, and you see how the dynamics of, yes, he is a horrific character. There are real terrible things about him, but they come from some context that is based in how we interpret the role. And that's not something O'Neill would have known. That's not something O'Neill would have interpreted or even thought about. It's something that this black man who actually lived that life brought to the character.
We're at a place in the culture right now where black artists are reinterpreting works by white writers in really different and exciting ways. Like, and I'm thinking of all black castings of Oklahoma that have been performed in some theaters around the country. And at the same time, there are different opportunities coming up in the wake of Hamilton by Lin-Manuel Miranda by writers of color. I mean, there's still a huge, huge discrepancy in American theater of the number of plays by white playwrights as playwrights of color that come up on stage. But, you know, the conversation is moving around out there. And I feel like there's more interest in seeing white writers just approach the experiences of people of color in a more real way. And the question of who is telling whose story is something that is now alive in theaters, I think, in a way that hasn't been before.
I think the conversation has always been there. I don't think we've always been willing to have it and be as frank and open about it. For me, colorblind casting, which is the black cast of Oklahoma, the example you gave, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in reinterpreting somebody else's experience with black people. I don't want to see black people be fake white people. I am much more interested, and I've said this before to friends, that until we have exhausted all of the stories that have never been told about African Americans, known and unknown, in the 400-plus history of this country, I don't need to do a black Batman or a black Inherit the Wind or anything, because I need to exhaust all of the things, the unique aspects of my life. With regards to Hamilton, that's a fine and exciting production, and I thoroughly enjoyed it when I saw it on Broadway. But what he does with that play, which is, again, unique, is that he reinterprets the experience of the founding of this country through the eyes of people of color. And that's a different approach than taking something that is already established.
What does this play tell us about interracial friendships at that time in America?
I think that it tells you that they are far more layered and in challenged because of the differences between races. Because the power dynamic, as I was saying, the power dynamic between actor and playwright that existed is one that you naturally have. One, when we're talking about the authorship of a role, those are legitimate arguments and areas of compromise that happen in the theater because, like I said, we're a collaborative art form. The problem, however, is when there's added on with the layer of race and restrictions of race, opportunities for people of different ethnicity. Eugene O'Neill has power and access and opportunity that Charles S. Gilpin did not have. And in fact, the relationship that they try to create as equals is artificial because of the circumstances through which they live.
Does this play have something to suggest to us about those kind of friendships and professional relationships today?
I think it has a strong argument to tell in regards to when we're talking about representation. The times in which the Emperor Jones was created, there were not opportunities for black actors of Gilpin's skill to regularly work on plays written by black writers. In fact, in a few years, 1923, we're going to see the NAACP ignite an interest in developing Black playwrights all over the country. So they do a call to action on writers from other art forms, poets, short story writers, to think about writing plays. That's because they're trying to build a canon from which we can start seeing works come from our authentic voice, what we call first voice. That's still important today. When we see work where characters on TV or in film are rendered by white authors and the characters are perceived as inauthentic, that challenges us specifically in regards to how true the statements are. And it's the same we feel. I know people criticize people like Martin Scorsese, whose works, with the exception of Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, all have male protagonists. And you say, wouldn't it be nice if he just wrote a female character of some prominence? I don't think I want somebody who's so obviously concerned about the plight of men writing a female character. I would prefer us excel and elevate women writers to write their own stories, as opposed to asking some man to do it for them. And I feel the exact same way when we're talking about people of color. I don't want white writers attempting to try to tell my story. I'd much prefer elevating writers like Adrian.
How do you feel like the pipeline is going for playwrights like Adrian and others who are bringing those stories out?
Here's the challenge. Across this country, Black theaters like Plowshares are under-resourced in regards to opportunities based on the way funding structures occurred. Right now, 56% of all arts dollars coming from foundations or individuals or corporations goes to the top 2% of arts organizations. So that's more than half of all the money is spent on 2%. Those organizations have a very similar complexion and perspective culturally. And so you find that the rest of us, the other 98% of the arts field, are fighting over 44% of all the money that's left, which in fact means that many institutions of color are left out. So that means that we have to rely more on box office, which means that in many cases, many of my peers don't do new play development. Because new play development cannot be guaranteed in comparison to a play that has established background or connection through a Broadway run. And that's been part of the challenge for us. I'm concerned about the pipeline not being strong enough to develop the work, which is the reason why Plowshares is focused on doing new work and newer work. The three shows we're doing this season, two of them are Michigan premieres. The third is a world premiere, never before seen. And that's a gamble we're taking because I believe that we can cultivate an audience here that is interested in seeing new work and doesn't need to see another production of A Raisin in the Sun or For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow is Enough.
Your actor in the role of Charles Gilpin is T. Farrell Muhammad.
Yes.
Will you tell us about what you feel he brings to this role?
I think he brings a sense of the energy behind the aspirations, the desire to really do the job well and also understand the cost that this role brought to Charles Gilpin. The character, in essence, is stereotypical. And so Charles had to bring more to it to try to make it something that is palatable. The N in the title, the letter N, stands for the N-word. And that's the main crux of the conflict between O'Neill and Gilpin, is the use of that word, because it's replete throughout the script. Gilpin changes it. Farrell understands what that word means and the power of it. And so he's able to bring a sense of communication to the audience about how soul-defeating it is to be put in that situation, to be forced in it, knowing that this is the way that he's going to make his living.
Your one shot at just continuing to do the thing that is your passion in life and to make a living that way and to have it be through this lens.
Right. Many, many actors, Black, white, red, green, and yellow, have gotten success at some level doing something that they knew that was patently offensive, and yet they did it anyway because there's an addiction to the recognition you receive. There's an addiction to what the promise of greater work that could come following this. There's an addiction to just being recognized for your talent, which comes so infrequently. Those are the elements of the character of Charles S. Gilpin. And we're really happy to be rendering that because his story was lost to the annals of theater history. There were some rumors out there about the original production where the excuses are he got rid of him because he was drunk, which have never been substantiated in any way, shape, or form. I mean, we know all about O'Neill's drinking. I mean, he even writes it into his own plays. So we're very well aware of that. Gilpin's tragedy is that he's successful, and that cost him his humanity. And Pharaoh is able to bring that through clearly to us on the stage.
Gary Anderson, thank you so much for talking to us about this.
Thank you.
Gary Anderson, he's the artistic director of Plowshares Theater in Detroit. He's directing Adrian Earl Pender's play entitled N through February 16th. Information's at our website at michiganradio.org. Arts and cultural coverage on Stateside is supported in part by an award from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.